news, information, opinions, history, and most importantly, always real. This is Rant EM Radio. And we are live on the air, across the airwaves of Rant Entertainment Media. It is Saturday afternoon, everybody. Or Saturday evening, depending if you're an early bird. But it is 5 p.m. Saturday, March 28th, 2015. Welcome, everybody, to this very special Rant EM Radio Roundtable discussing the legacy of one Vincent Kennedy McMahon. We are in the midst of our WrestleMania marathon. And my, oh my, we are on the road to WrestleMania. I mean, we're well on the road. We're like 5 minutes away, technically. No, not technically, but theoretically. But day three of the marathon, folks. And my God, if you were not around Thursday, you missed two epic shows. If you were not around yesterday, you missed two epic shows. And guess what? If you're around today, you're going to get two epic shows. And it all starts with this roundtable. Hi, everybody. Double A being joined by the Impact player, Mr. Phil Rea.
Good evening.
We've got Tony C, who is on the mend.
Hey, yo.
You're sounding better.
That's what I'm talking about.
And, of course, the one they call Surfer.
Greetings.
Big, big weekend, folks, and I hope you're enjoying so far the marathon. And, of course, if you missed any part of the marathon, all the shows are available on iTunes. Little programming note, immediately following this broadcast, you can hear a replay of last night's Freaks and Effing Geeks, and it was a classic. At the end of the show, Lee was fed up with rage. I mean, beyond fed up. So yeah. And then this show that you're hearing right now and the Hall of Fame post show will air after the Hall of Fame tonight. So we got you covered. If you miss any of it and you're on the go, you can definitely tune into Rant EM Radio all weekend long and listen to the various replays. And, of course, we'll have a full replay of everything beginning Monday morning at 6 a.m. We'll talk about the lineup for the rest of the weekend in just a little bit. But how's everybody's WrestleMania weekend going so far?
Great.
Great? You've done anything special?
Well, it's my birthday weekend.
Well, of course, but you know, that was Thursday. I mean, we're on Saturday as it is.
Oh, no, it's all week, doubling.
What's your birthday?
Finally got a PS4.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Look at that. So now you can watch the network. Now you can watch the WWE Network and everything on there.
I got Battlefield Hardline. So, taking people to jail, you know.
We'll be taking calls in just a little bit, and I know that Jordan is clamoring to get on.
And your cake? What kind of cake did you get?
I didn't really get any cake, sir. I got some sherbet, and I'm good.
Jordan, I'll take your call in a little bit. You got to wait for me to start the show before you want to chime in on. We haven't even started the damn roundtable yet. Relax. Oh boy, man. Well, it is WrestleMania. The man, the genius behind WrestleMania, or the mad scientist behind WrestleMania, is one Vince McMahon. And today we're going to talk about his legacy. A lot of people think his legacy is tarnished. A lot of people think it isn't. But really, what is McMahon's legacy? I mean, I don't even know where to start. Should we start with how Vince got where he is? Or should we just talk about the current day McMahon and work our way backwards and try to add and subtract the pros and the cons and all the positive things and the negative things that he did in this industry? I mean, how should we start this? Because when you're talking about Vince McMahon, you're talking about a lot of stuff.
Well, my vote would be to start from the beginning because it's like, well, I'll explain more as we go along, but.
Well, okay. I guess that answers that.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Well, here's the thing. A lot of people don't know Vince McMahon, born Vinnie Lupton in North Carolina. He's from North Kakalaki. It's a true rags to riches story.
Country.
He's from the country. True rags to riches story. He grew up in a trailer until one day he found out that his father was a wrestling promoter, Vince McMahon Sr. And he went to go live with his father I believe in his teens. And from there, he went from Vinnie Lupton to Vince McMahon. So, and of course, he was enamored with what his dad did for a living. His dad was a promoter. Promoted wrestling. Second generation promoter, by the way. Because Vince Sr.'s father, Jess McMahon, started promoting boxing, wrestling, and other shows in the early 20s in the New York area, and then Vince Sr. Took over for Jess McMahon. But it wasn't until 1970... No, wait. I take that back. It wasn't until 1982 that Vince Jr. took over the promotion.
Yeah, wrestling was promoted, yeah. I think, in the late 60s, early 70s with Capital Wrestling.
Yeah.
With Vince's dad. And that's when around, I know he was a teenager when he moved in with his dad. So, and I think if you want to go that far back and start working your way, it doesn't matter really. At this point, you know, the industry has changed drastically in like the last 15 years between the Attitude Era, the monopolization of sports entertainment, and then more importantly, what's going on now. I just think the newer fans don't have a clue about the legacy. And you know what? It is a legacy.
No.
No, you don't think so, Tony?
No, I'm saying they don't.
Okay. Because, you know, for him to do what he did and from Jump Street taking the risk that he did initially, no one else at that time, oh, I don't think anybody now, even with money, would do that. You know what I'm saying? I think people forget that, you know? So they want to... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Sorry, I was about... You're saying that what Vince did, no one else would have done?
No.
No, I don't... I can't believe that, because I think what he did was an eventual thing that was going to happen. If it wasn't Vince, somebody would eventually would have done it. Maybe not as fast as Vince did it, or the same way, but we would have got to this point. At some point, through someone else, if Vince didn't have the vision to do it himself.
I don't know, man.
I wouldn't say that.
Only
everybody's not the same type of visionary. So
he took house money and invested it in something that wasn't even thought of. I mean, besides cherry picking, guys from the the territories, when he went and grabbed the Valentines of the world and the Pipers and the Ortons and the Hogans, you know, and then went to Stampede and grabbed the Bulldogs and the Hart Foundation, and the Junkyard Dog from Mid-South. I can go on and on and on. He built guys who were already established in other places. Then he took house money and started WrestleMania.
Right.
Like, nobody expected to jump off like that.
Well, let's stop right there. I think. Let me try to understand both sides of what Phil and Surfer just said. Surfer thinks that nobody would have come along, or no, Phil thinks that nobody would have come along as the visionary that McMahon was, and that surfer doesn't agree with that. But what I think is, while I agree with what Surfer said in the sense that I think somebody would have come along and maybe taken the business national, I don't think that anybody would have came along and did it the way Vince did.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying the way he did it, someone else would have did, but
because the thing is, Vince went from wrestling to entertainment, not overnight, but you know, over the course of, let's say, okay, he took over in 1982. That's more or less the year. There's not an exact timetable, but I think that's the year he took over. And from 82 to 84, you know, we're talking 82, January 84 is when Hogan came in. You know, we're talking a year, year and a half, maybe 2 years tops, that Vince turned this behemoth upside down and went from a Northeast wrestling promotion, wrestling, national yeah. entertainment promotion. Because, sure enough, after Hogan came in 84, like Phil was saying, 85 came around, and the first WrestleMania. And by then, was already, and I mean, if they were not national by that point, they certainly were national by the time the first WrestleMania happened.
Right, another thing too. In 84, he buys time on cable television to rival an already established promotion in the Crockett's.
Right,
and bombs.
Right, and that was another thing that I was going to bring up, because there was the infamous Black Saturday that everybody remembers if you grew up in that era. July 14th, 1984, bombs. Was Georgia Championship Wrestling, that infamous Saturday night 6:05 time slot on TBS. He bought out the promotion and took over the time slot, had a handshake agreement with Ted Turner on what that time slot was supposed to encompass. Ted feels that Vince didn't follow through with the agreement. Vince feels Ted didn't follow through with the agreement. They decided to part ways, but instead of relinquishing the time slot, and the stories that everybody claims that you know, that claims is the right story, is that Vince sold the time slot to Jim Crockett, and with the money he got from the sale of the time slot is what paid for the first WrestleMania.
Think about this too.
Now, yeah.
Forget about the handshake agreement. The product wasn't well accepted.
No.
Like, nobody liked what was going on. So his vision, and this is right after Hogan wins the belt, right?
Yep.
And this is right before Mania 1.
Right.
So now you have this, he's in this, is in between.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no even guarantee that the money he got was, and like I said, house money. You know, no one knew the outcome. No one knew that this was going to take off.
Right.
No. And I think that was the pinnacle. I think that him not getting well accepted in the South, or on TBS, or on cable television for that matter, then getting picked up by USA Network and doing his own little talk show and the variety show, like, you know, it was the Tuesday Night Titans.
Yeah.
And then that, he got, when he got what he wanted, then he starts the ball rolling. But go back to that day in July where nothing is received and nothing is for sure. Still, the man was smart enough to say, you know what, I'm sticking to my guns. He surrounded himself with really good people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he had, like, I mean, not for nothing, Pat Patterson, say what you want about the man, but he had the book for over 20 years.
Right.
You know, and then this is before the Hollywood writing. This is before the bullshit. This is when it was still grassroots, and they weren't going around the country yet. This is before pay-per-view. This is still closed circuit. This is still homegrown type stuff. But that year, 84 is the year.
That the game changed.
Right, he was on, I'm sorry, All American Wrestling was on USA, but that was syndicated. I'm talking about the talk show format. I'm talking about what he did after July of 84.
Right.
So
he, the game changed, really. In 1984, whether it was in January when Hogan came in, July when the whole thing happened on Black Saturday, 84 was a pivotal year in the industry, because McMahon put his foot down and said, listen, everybody's got to fall into line because I'm taking over whether you like it or not. And sure, he suffered some bumps along the way. But look what happened in 1984. How many wrestling promotions were there in 1984? They were everywhere.
That were on TV?
Well, in general. I'm talking about in general. They were everywhere.
Yeah, there were plenty.
Everywhere. Every city, every state had a wrestling promotion. I mean, we're talking 40, 50 wrestling promotions that were in the United States alone at one time. And then, you know, let's not to skip ahead, but from 84 to we go to WrestleMania 3, which is March of 87, and most of these promotions have gone under already.
And yes.
It was a short period of time because Vince went in. A lot of people don't agree, say that Vince played dirty to get where he's at, and you know that may be true, but sometimes you just got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, but he had
he had a lot of good hands to help.
Right, and he had hands. He had territories. Territory. He had the territory, and he had what other people didn't have, and that was cable television. Unless you were the Crockett's and Ted Turner. No one else had TV. So either you were going to Mid-Atlantic or you were coming up north to Connecticut, to New York.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So yeah. So many rumors about the Starcades and nobody knows for sure. It's all hearsay because, like Double A said, everything was on a handshake agreement. There was no contracts. There was none of that nonsense. It was like, okay, listen, I'm going to promote here. You're going to promote there. And then, you know, you get money at the gate, you give it out to the people, whoever you got to give it out to, and that's pretty much it. You know? It started in 84. 84 was the pinnacle.
Right.
Hogan wins the belt. They go national on television, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And with house money. That was it. And that's and I think that was the start of his legacy. He saw something bigger than everything else. He saw the entertainment value of it, which is where we are today. You guys can debate that after I leave, but like that, to me, that's the start of it. You know, and that's where I picked it up when I was, you know,
now do you think,
old, you know, 9 year old.
Now to ask around the room here, Vince's tactics. You know, a lot of people said that Vince went in. And let's say they went to Cincinnati, for example, and they didn't have a TV clearance in Cincinnati for whatever reason. Vince went into the TV station where a wrestling program was airing, and he would pay double, if not triple, what the other promotion was paying to buy the time slot. And then there, you know, by proxy, that promotion lost its TV deal, and without TV, you can't promote. Promotion eventually would go out of business. Whether that's true, I tend to believe that that's true because Vince could not have just done this by going to a rival TV station. Because despite how big the WWE is, we all know. Well, Surfer, Phil and Surfer may think a little bit different because they're Northeast guys, but I don't think that there's any local promotion, even going as far as Jim Crockett Promotions, that could hold a candle in terms of what they produced on television week in, week out, than what the WWF was producing, you know, in the early 80s. Because when I go and I, let's say they put on an old episode of All American Wrestling or Championship Wrestling or one of those shows from the 80s that was syndicated or aired on USA Network, to me, those shows are unwatchable. In my opinion, you put on a show of, let's say, Worldwide Wrestling from 1984, 1985, to me, that's watchable.
Right, to add to that, you guys are Florida guys.
Right,
so if you grew up in the mid to late 80s, or even early 80s, you got Florida Championship Wrestling.
Exactly.
And the Grams, you know, I didn't get that until 86, 87. Right. I got my backlog was on a UHF channel 4 years prior.
Right.
So like, you know, every territory had every region had their thing. Now on the Northeast where Surfer and I are, you know, we got monthly house shows. And this is before pay per view.
Yeah.
We had monthly shows guaranteed. there were championship matches every single month, and these guys did you know, I don't know about Philly, but I know for a fact in New York, they did little boxing arenas, they did church auditoriums,
right.
They did all that. So I went to see Jimmy Snuka and Andre the Giant at the Richard Grove Arena.
You know,
no, I'm sure Surfer went to the South Philly friggin', what do you call it? Like the YMCA to see the Road Warriors, you know what I'm saying?
No, but in addition to the monthly house show, we did get the television tapings, which you guaranteed to get that at least once every couple of months. They would take the TV show
right.
that you saw on the weekends.
And Vince did nothing illegal. The guys talking about in the chat room, is Derek's talking about how Vince, you know, paid money and bought off stations. That's not illegal.
It's not illegal. It's unethical, but it's not illegal.
But you know,
it's unethical because
define unethical because you know what? If he's got the money and these stations are going to take that money and put it on, it's not a thing where listen. Vern Gagne was a friggin' millionaire,
right?
So why didn't Vern Gagne take the Midwest? Vern Gagne should have had the Midwest from Jump Street when he started making money off his book, okay? And I'll argue that I don't want to hear about them pissing. Listen, I love the AWA. I love the DVDs. But when you talk about guys like Vern Gagne, who was a cheap bastard, and the dude was a multi-millionaire at one point, and he didn't want to sign guys, he gave up on Hogan because of T-shirts. Right. He gave up on Hogan because Hogan wanted to do movies, and he wanted to cut of what was going on. Come on, man. You had guys from all over the world at that point.
It's not – I don't know. Maybe unethical is not the right word. But the thing is that if Vince did not do what he did, there's no way that Vince could have gone on a competing station, I think, in these areas and outdid them in television ratings. I don't think so.
It's like back in the day when, you know, in the 50s when rock and roll artists wanted their record played, and that was illegal. They would pay, like, the DJs.
Payola,
right? Yeah. Okay, so, like, when Chubby Checker wanted to do the twist in Indiana, and they didn't want no part of Chubby Checker, his promotion was like, yo, listen, I'll give you a couple extra bucks, you hit me off, and you play, you know, do the twist again. And they twisted till, you know, whatever, they twisted for another 10, 15. But, like, I want to stick up for Vince because I would have did the same thing. If I had the money, and I had these networks, hey, listen, I'll give you, they're not giving, first of all, there was no competition back then. And those guys had money. Texas had money. Florida had money. And so did the Midwest.
Right.
So I don't want to hear shit about Shinola about any of that.
Oh, no, of course not. The reason why the big promotions, the AWA, World Class, eventually what became WCW, the reason why those promotions closed up shop, you know, I'm not lumping WCW into that, but I'm just as a whole, the reason why those places closed up shop is because they could not. Vince thought two steps ahead, and they had a problem doing that. They only thought about, well, you know, let me figure out a way how to kick Vince's ass tomorrow. You know, no, Vince was trying to figure out how to kick your ass six months from now.
Right, and that's what Ted Turner wasn't getting. I want to compete. I want wrestling. He loved wrestling.
Right,
and it was a
part of wrestling.
Right, and he figured, well, if Vince can do it, I can do it. And you know what? He did. But the problem was, A, you know, you gave the wrong people the book. And I'm not saying Eric Bischoff was the wrong guy. And that's another podcast. But I'm talking about, you know, Vince had a vision and ran with it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like Ted Turner snapped and went, you know what? Now I want to compete. Oh, wait. All of a sudden, here comes Vern Gagne. Now he gets the ESPN deal. He wants to compete. Oh. World Class wants to compete. The Von Erichs want to compete. All of a sudden, they see what Vince was doing, and everybody jumped on the bandwagon. Everybody jumped
Vince,
on.
What's Vince that? Missed. No, Vince missed the bus with the book too.
Yeah, of course he did. You can, and that's Vince. That the book got missed right after 2001, and that's just
missed
my
opinion. In 92.
You know,
I was talking about it last night.
I think Vince lost control. I think Vince, I don't know, because Vince did a lot of things right for so many years, and then it's like everybody. But then again, you know, it's not his fault because everybody does lose their focus, and you know, goes through a dry period where things maybe are not as great. And then, listen, I mean, Vince has been at the helm of the WWE now for 32 years, or 33 years, how whatever it is. And you know, for the majority of the time, Vince has been on top. Yeah, granted, there were some bleak times.
Oh Christ, the early 90s were terrible.
You know, but Vince.
WrestleMania in Hartford.
Well, Vince, you know, his whole promotion started off as the clown show. You know, everybody had a costume and a gimmick,
right?
And it was more about than actual wrestling. And then that little part in the early 90s where he was trying to transition back to just wrestling, it kind of didn't work for a while. Not that we want the clown show back, but you know, you went from wrestlers who was like all huge, giant, monstrous guys to people like Bret Hart, who was nice size, but, you know, didn't look as imposing as what you was used to.
He was just an average-looking guy.
And so now the vision changes, and he wants to go in another direction, the new generation, as we called it the other night, right, Tony C? Right?
Yeah.
So it was, you know, that was a really bleak period, because now, all of a sudden, Turner's got the wheels. Turner's got just as much TV now. He built an empire with his network.
Right.
And now he's getting TV, he's getting the weekly shows, and he's getting pay-per-views. And WCW from like 91 to 93 was just hanging on.
Right.
You know, and all of a sudden they get Hogan. Hogan changes the game. Hogan changed the game
for a lot of people.
For everyone. Okay, and hate him if you want. I'm not a big fan. You all know that, but he is. And you know, you want to. I use that word trendsetter a lot this week from the throwback of what was going on with Howard Stern. But think about the trend setting entertainment aspect of what McMahon did with Hogan, and WCW just scooped it right up and said, "We're going to take it." You dropped the ball, and Vince dropped the ball. Vince could have held on to Hogan another 2-3 years tops, and I don't know if it would have changed the game any more than it did, but society changed, and sometimes you can't keep up. With sports, it's different. With sports, it's the same baseball game, it's the same football game, it's the same basketball and hockey. The rules change slightly, but it's the same nonsense. When it comes to entertainment, listen, the circus has been coming to New York for over 50 years. Okay?
Right.
Even the circus has got to switch it up a bit.
Right, because how many times can you see an elephant come out?
That, exactly.
Exactly.
And, you know, so now his vision becomes diluted when he, like Surfer said, you get the big muscle guys, Vince loves his big guys, and now the big guys aren't that, all the talented guys aren't that big anymore. They're midgets. They're 240 pounds, 220 pounds and under 6 foot. Okay? The micro. Yeah. World and the Bret Harts of the world, and you put this in perspective. What Vince did initially, no one can get that back. No one gets that back. And you know, you go all the way up to when he went public and all this other nonsense. But the entertainment aspect alone, him and Hogan changed the game. The game changed drastically, and that's why he had to change the game when Hogan was in WCW because of. Yeah, because they signed all the other guys, and he said, "You know, I'm gonna get nasty. I'm gonna show tits and ass. I'm gonna get Austin. I'm gonna get The Rock." And he homegrown a couple of guys. You know, he had The Rock. He got a young Triple H. If WCW gave up on Triple H, and that was, you know what I'm saying. He took a mixture of homegrown guys and guys that they were hand-me-downs.
Not to mention, he knew what to do with a lot of bigger guys that WCW didn't know what to do. I mean,
right.
They had The Undertaker. They had Kevin Nash. They had a lot of these guys. They took guys that was failed basketball players,
Kane,
converted them to wrestlers, and didn't know what to do with them.
Yeah.
And Vince knew what to do with them.
And you know what? I'm sorry, Tony. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to know. Want to be a fly on that wall for that booking meeting that led up to WrestleMania 8? That told him not to put Flair and Hogan in there together.
Yeah, because that right there, and that was a big subject last night on Freaks and Geeks, because they were they really, I mean, Lee was just he still is having a hard time accepting how Vince could have missed the boat on it, because he had the opportunity right there at WrestleMania 8, and he ended up with Flair and Savage, and then Sid and Hogan, which I forgot which one closed out the show, but
Hogan and Sid.
Hogan and Sid closed out the show. And yeah, I mean, listen.
Whoever suggested that needed to be fired.
You know what? That was 92, and there was a lot of weird things going on in wrestling in 92, especially for Vince. Because 92, I think, was also the whole Phil Donahue
thing.
And there was just a lot of weird things going on for Vince. And that probably right there was just a lapse of judgment. I honestly probably think Vince regrets it now.
Of course he does.
But, you know, it's you know, WCW was able to utilize it. Listen, I'm a WCW guy. I'm always going to be a WCW guy. I feel that Ric Flair's home is always going to be WCW. But I know that WCW could have never made that match.
What Vince could
have.
Right.
Yeah.
They did okay, and it ended up being WCW's biggest pay-per-view ever for up until that point.
Yeah.
But there would have been absolutely no way for
where I grew up, that was always the big argument, who was better between Hogan and Flair.
Sure.
You know? Yeah. And, you know, I had guys, they died on NWA / WCW and just thought that nothing Vince could do made sense. And they would swear up and down that if Flair got in the ring with Hogan, that Hogan wouldn't stand a chance. And Vince had the cards and didn't play it.
See, I'm going to play devil's advocate, and I agree with all of you that they dropped the ball with Flair and Hogan. I just think Vince, being the entertainer, being the promoter, figured he can get more bang for his buck by splitting those two main event guys up and putting them in different matches. I don't agree with it. We talked, Tony and I talked about it on the throwbacks 2 weeks ago. We didn't like it. Nobody liked it. I think, you know, as a promoter, and I was in a band, I see club promoters trying to get that big bill, you know, like, hey, we're going to have like 10 bands open up for this main band. And you know, 10 bands, everybody has a following. They're going to go to these shows. Same thing with wrestling. It's like if they know Flair, Hogan, and Savage are on the same card, that's money for Vince, man. The money match would have been Flair and Hogan, obviously. That didn't happen until 91, I think.
Right.
But, and for me, in the Garden, anyway. But.
And that's the thing. They had the match in the Garden. They had the match in a couple of house shows, and that was it.
Yeah, because, again, yeah. I think just playing devil's advocate, I agree with all of you. I'm just being an advocate for Vince right now. I think Vince. I just think Vince, as a promoter.
Did you cash the check yet?
Right. Well, I wish, right?
Payola.
Yeah, but think about it, though. Like, if you're a promoter and you had three main event guys that drew money at that time and sold a shit ton of merch, wouldn't you not want to put those guys in separate matches?
But, let's say in boxing, if you got Ali and Frazier, you don't have them fight two other guys.
I agree. I'm just saying, listen, I'm just saying as a promoter, not as a wrestling booker, as an entertainer, I want to entertain the crowd. I want all my guys in matches.
You know what? I would do it depending on how long I have the guys for, because I could always draw from that well next year. If I, like, for example, if I'm guaranteed that Ric Flair is going to be at WrestleMania 9, which he wasn't, but if I'm guaranteed that he's going to be at WrestleMania 9, okay, maybe I don't have to do Hogan and Flair for WrestleMania 8. I could build to WrestleMania 9 in Las Vegas, and that way the main event didn't have to be what it was, and they had a year, and they could have had a whole year to build up to it. Right. But unfortunately, Rick didn't stay in WWE. He went back to WCW. Hogan left the WWE shortly after Flair did, and you know, it's like. But if I was guaranteed, like right now, to bring it to present day, okay, Brock Lesnar re-signed his WWE contract, and it's a multi-year deal, which means we're going to get Brock Lesnar probably for the next three WrestleManias. Okay? That means Vince now can sit down and strategically say, all right, I have Brock Lesnar for WrestleManias 32, 33, and 34. I think I'm going to go with Brock and The Rock for 32. And maybe I can stretch it out and have Brock and Sting for, you know, 33. And, you know, Vince now can think like that clearly. But maybe back then, Vince thought, oh, you know what, Flair's not going anywhere.
Yeah, there are more guaranteed contracts now than and that's A. And B, this is where Vince drops the ball because he's not strategically doing this anymore. He's pushing 70 years old. He's got Triple H and Stephanie running the company, which I don't have a problem with that either. But now the inmates aren't running the asylum.
But you know what? You just made a very, very good statement. So here we are. We're talking about Vince's legacy. So I think it's an honest statement that it's to say that Vince maybe is out of touch. Vince has become what Vern Gagne was in the 80s and things, you know, those old school promoters that
absolutely
he's out of touch. He's not
the only right way.
He's not plugged in, and evident of that was last night.
NXT
in San Jose last night. Now listen, we don't have video. We have limited video. We have a lot of pictures and a lot of feedback of the event in San Jose. The event not only was sold out, the crowd was raucous, loud, into the night, into the matches the entire night. Triple H had one promo in the ring about something with NXT and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, we're not talking about the Triple H that was on Raw this past Monday night. We're talking about Triple H, the COO of the company, and the fans in the audience were chanting, thank you, Hunter, thank you, Hunter, you know, because the initial quote that I got from NXT in San Jose last night was, this event has the vibe of a very big-time ROH event. That's saying a lot, because a lot of people would die for ROH. They would fight the ultimate fight for ROH. They would never put WWE and ROH on the same sentence. You know, and here we are, we have people commenting that this particular event that happened last night in San Jose, forget about everything else that has happened. Forget about the takeover specials and Arrival and Fatal 4-Way and things like that, all those things that happened last year. Mm-hmm. This event that happened last night was on par that anything ROH has done in the last 5 years. That's a lot. And it's with this one little promotion that Vince has nothing to do with. This one little brand that Vince has absolutely nothing to do with. And here we got the quote-unquote developmental, and Triple H's quote last night was, developmental my ass. He said that live on the microphone last night.
Wow.
You've got NXT doing this, and here's Raw and SmackDown doing that. But don't, you know, Triple H works on all three shows, but Vince is controlling Raw and SmackDown. And week in, week out, you know, we sit here, we bitch and we moan about what happens on television and this and that. Well, we know whose fault it is. and listen, I don't want I got a lot of respect for Vince. A lot of respect. The man, let's be honest, the man owns the wrestling business. Okay? He owns this industry. But I don't want Vince's, you know, like Phil said, Vince is almost 70 years old. I don't want Vince to go out on a bad note. We're getting to this point now where Vince should just probably just say,
You know what, guys?
I'm going to put my pencil down.
Before I go, and I got to go in like five minutes, I'm gonna say this.
Yeah.
If Vince McMahon puts the pen down tomorrow or next year or in 5 years from now, which I don't even see that happening because he's still a beast, you know, His legacy starts and ends with March 31st, 1985.
Yeah.
Okay.
With Mania, no doubt.
It has to be. And I'll tell you this: if you didn't have, if he didn't take the risk that he took, Turner would never have done what he had done.
Right.
Gagne would never have done what he had done. Florida, any other territory who had some kind of TV, Bill Watts in Mid-South would not have done what he's done because they didn't have the vision. You can, and some of the guys had the money.
Even his father didn't have the vision. I mean, he had Hogan. He let Hogan go because he thought Hogan shouldn't do movies.
And he still made money.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing, man. It's real. Everybody sitting here on this round table can start a business tomorrow. You can have this great idea, and you can start a business, and you can profit from it. The goal is to stay afloat.
Yeah,
that's the and you know these fucking kids don't see that. These marks, these money mark kids, and these younger fans don't see that. All they see is Austin and Rock and middle fingers and tits and ass and Nitro girls and fucking NWO. That's all they see.
Right.
But they don't see the bigger picture.
Yeah, I mean it's... Do I got a little feedback? I think... Tony C, turn your mic up a little bit.
I'm sorry. Yeah,
bring it down just an inch. Bring it down just
an inch. Is it done?
Yeah, I think it's good now. Okay, that's yeah. Good. Perfect. That's perfect.
I mean, that's the thing, man. There's so many people. It's like, you know... And there's visionaries in every genre. I mean, Donald Trump's a visionary with real estate. Mm-hmm. You know? Mark Cuban's a visionary in sports ownership. I mean, guy, there are visionaries everywhere. But in this industry that we love so much and we pissing on every week like Double A said about it, there is just one guy that took everybody out. He bought...
Well, WCW, he didn't take them out.
Well, no. You know what? And I was
Time Warner had no... First of all, let's be honest. Ted Turner dropped the ball when he figured, nah, I'm done with wrestling. After 25 years, I'm done with it. It doesn't do nothing for me.
It wasn't Ted. It was the corporate giants of AOL who wanted to get rid of it.
I'm talking about Ted Turner selling it to AOL. And then Vince bought it from AOL. Okay.
Excuse me. No, well, no, I mean, like...
Ted
took his company, right? And he wasn't going to compete against Time Warner. So he merged with Time Warner. So then AOL came along and had an offer for Time Warner. But, you know, Ted wasn't owner once he merged with Time Warner.
He lost control. He lost his place. But still, the point was is that had he allowed himself to just stay Turner Broadcasting, things could be a little bit different. Because to be honest with you, I don't watch CNN that much. I don't watch TBS or TNT and things like that. But all those years prior to the mergers, we're talking, I think the Time Warner merger happened in 96. All those years prior to that, Turner Broadcasting was doing perfectly well without the help of Time Warner.
Absolutely.
And you know, with Time, they could have kicked Time Warner's ass. You know, look, Viacom was doing great things on their own with MTV and Nickelodeon and VH1 and all these other shows. There would have been no reason for Time Warner to do the same. Turner Broadcasting.
Viacom owned USA?
What was that?
Didn't Viacom...
That's NBC.
I'm sorry, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
What? I mean, Turner would have had to eventually sold to somebody.
I don't think so. Because there's a lot of these smaller networks that have been around for 30 plus years. You know, the A&Es and the...
That's part of a bigger network.
But listen, the A&Es and the AMCs of the world that are not affiliated with...
No, that's not true. They're all part of bigger corporations.
Let me finish what I'm saying, Surfer. These networks that are not affiliated with the Time Warners and the and the Viacoms and the NBCs of the world. Yeah, okay, they're owned by big networks, Surfer, but they're not owned by the big networks.
Yeah, at this point, everything's owned by Disney or...
But not, I'm talking about specifically... Comcast. Okay, but I'm talking specifically about...
Time Warner.
All right, but I'm talking specifically about A&E and AMC right now. These networks, while they may be owned by a big corporation, they are not owned by the big corporations. And they seem to survive just fine for the past 30-plus years that they've been on the air. A&E and AMC are two of the oldest cable networks on television.
There was just no interest in pro wrestling and sports entertainment.
And that's it. That's the end. That's the be all end all.
Right.
Right there.
And Vince just. This is all Vince had. Mm-hmm. See, Ted Turner had other interests. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Where Vince didn't have a network. Well, he does now, but Vince didn't have a network. Vince didn't have anything else, so he stuck with it. And before I go, another thing too. You know how hard it is for a company to go public? You know how hard it is?
Very hard.
You have to be in the upper echelon financially. You know, Wikipedia will tell you he's worth $750. Forbes says he's a billionaire. At this point in the game, it's why he's so great is because he's stuck with it.
Right.
But everybody else couldn't. Ask Paul Heyman about that. You know, ask everybody he purchased the video library from. He owns about 85% to 90% of the stuff that we watch as kids.
Yeah,
fathom that. If he walked away tomorrow from wrestling, he could still bank off the footage he purchased from all the territories.
Yep.
So that. I want the marks to let that sink in.
And you know what? And when this happened, you know, really, because all this did not start 20, 30 years ago. I mean, when Vince was growing his promotion, Vince didn't buy out anybody. Vince just moved in and put these people out of business, and nobody gave up any of their video libraries for 20 years. The first video library Vince purchased was WCW, and that was in 2001. It's only recently that he's accumulating all these libraries because, you know, the footage has sat in God knows where, warehouses, basements,
things like that. Ex-wife
safe. Yeah, that's the Mid-South library.
Collecting dust. And
just collecting dust, not doing anything.
And
Vince decided, you know, Vince woke up one day, okay, I bought WCW, I got the video library, you know what, let me do this. And of course with WCW, Vince acquired a lot of other video libraries with it, because WCW bought some of the smaller promotions that were around the Mid-Atlantic area, and by proxy they took over their video libraries. So Vince had a good chunk of wrestling just with WCW. Then he bought ECW. Then he, you know, he went and he bought Texas and he bought the AWA and Stampede and you know, he bought a couple of promotions out north and a couple up in the Northeast, and then I think the last big one that he bought was Mid-South, and the one holdout so far has been Memphis, and that's only because that there's a conflict of interest between Jerry Jarrett and Jerry Lawler. Jerry probably wants to sell, or Jerry Lawler wants to sell, and Jerry Jarrett doesn't. You know, so you need both sides of the
want a part.
Yeah,
want to do business
exactly. So everything has to be licensed. If they use any Memphis footage, they have to license everything. Through Lawler and Jarrett. But anyways. Yeah, I mean that takes chutzpah too. That it's, you say, you know what, I'm gonna buy this, and one day I'm gonna, you know, last night on my way home from the hospital, I was listening. I had Howard Stern on, and they were playing because, you know, with WrestleMania this weekend, they decided to play the day that Vince went on Howard's show, and this is from 2001. This was about 4 days before Vince bought WCW, and a fan came in and asked Vince flat out, "Are you going to buy WCW?" Vince goes, "Probably." Is there any truth to the rumor of a wrestling channel? And Vince just gave a very vague answer. Like, not really. But Vince knew something then.
Right, Vince knew the technology was going to get better. And it did. Like, and you mentioned merchandising and, yeah, and franchising and licensing revolutionized the business.
Yeah.
Music company. He has his own music company.
Yeah.
Like, he had Jim Johnson in his pocket for 25 years. The guy is legendary for writing music for these wrestlers.
Right.
I just, yeah, again, you go back and back and back, and I think kids need to realize that. Just respect what was before you to get where you are today. And even if it sucks, you had something back then, go with it. Like, embrace what was going on, because if you didn't have that, you wouldn't have the network. You wouldn't have, like, NXT. You wouldn't have whatever you guys like, whatever the kids like about what's going on right now in sports entertainment.
I mean that's where his legacy ultimately is that he was just a visionary that saw the bigger picture, that knew in 30 years this is where we were going to be.
I got to go, fellas.
All right, Phil, thank you for
the Lord. I will check you guys out later on tonight.
All right.
Have a great show.
Okay, thanks, man. Thanks for being a part of this table.
Later, boys.
All right. That's Phil Rea. You can hear him later on tonight during the Hall of Fame post show, and of course tomorrow afternoon on Turnbuckle Throwbacks Live at 2 p.m. We'll talk about the full lineup here in just a little bit. If you want to call in, 954-889-7268, AA The Rant, all one word on Skype, as we move into hour number two of the Legacy of Vince McMahon Roundtable. Now, guys, here's the thing. Vince's legacy was almost destroyed at one time. A lot of people feel that it could be for one reason or another. I feel because, and at this point it's not going to happen, but in 1997, somebody came awfully close to beating Vince McMahon at his own game. And I've said this a million times. This person is the only person on the planet, the only one on the planet that can say, I almost put Vince McMahon out of business. And that man is Eric Bischoff. Do you think that if Eric put Vince out, do you think Vince's legacy would have been destroyed?
It wouldn't have been destroyed. I would say probably tainted. You know, but not destroyed.
Because, I mean, how do you go from being I'm gonna flip the coin now. Vince put WCW out of business, that he bought WCW and things like that. But all those years that Eric Bischoff was on Raw as the GM, I looked at Eric very differently after that. It was like, it's hard to believe that you almost put Vince out of business. It was hard to fathom. It was hard to digest that, you know, and I'm not trying to degrade Eric and say that what he did during his time in the WWE was beneath him. But it's just like, I looked at him very differently because, like, he was in the WWE and I was like, boy, did you have some fall from grace.
You in the catbird seat. Now, like you said, you fell from grace.
That's like having, you know, like, you know, Larry Bird or Magic Johnson or Michael Jordan, you know, they were kick-ass players in basketball for years and years and years, and then one thing happens, and
now they're a role player.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it makes sense. Or it's like somebody who was a main eventer, and now they kind of basically almost jobbing, right?
Exactly. I mean, that's pretty much the gist of it. But it's just Lexicon is on the way to the WWE Hall of Fame right now. We just got that in on the wire.
Cool.
So, if anybody wants to keep track of what Lexicon is doing, follow his WrestleMania diary by going to rantemradio.com. His experiences of Thursday and Friday are currently up, and you can definitely check them out now. And I'm sure tomorrow we'll have his tales of what it was like to go to the Hall of Fame, which, by the way, will air live on the WWE Network in about an hour's time, and we will be on the air at 11 or 12 midnight, depending on what time they get off the air, for our Hall of Fame post-show. So, now Surfer stepped away for a second, but Tony, do you is there anything about from Vince McMahon that you heard him did it and it made you scratch your head and be like, I why? What is something
outside of the not doing the flair and
it could be anything. You could list a couple of things if you want.
One of the big things was the whole Montreal thing. I mean, it kind of made sense in theory. So with Brett,
yeah, he was protecting his interests.
Yeah, but I don't think Brett would have did him like that. They've done business so before.
I don't think
he could have trusted Brett not to do that.
Yeah, I think he could have trusted Brett.
Now, Sean, no. If it was flip-flop, no.
I would agree with that. Especially especially where Sean was in his life at that point in time. You know, Sean is not the guy he is now.
And you remember they had to beg him to put Austin over, remember?
Yeah.
Because Taker was about to beat him up if he didn't do it. So, yeah, that's one of the things.
I think for me, one of the big things was when there were a couple of things that really stand out. But I think that because here's the thing, and this is where a lot of the wrestlers don't agree with Vince, because Vince feels that if I can do it, you can do it. For example, when Vince died in the limo explosion, I don't know. To me, that was like way over the top. Way unnecessary.
No. The God thing was way over.
That's another one too. Forget about Katie Vick and all these things. I think that these particular things that were involving Vince in you know, himself was just, you know, you left you scratching like what?
Like, really, man, really?
Yeah.
Don't take on God. Really.
And you know, I don't necessarily think Vince making him the ECW champion, making himself the ECW champion, did the world any good.
No, it didn't.
Especially
right about that.
Especially given that period of time where Vince was wearing that awful getup.
Yeah, with the black, all black, with the black durag.
With the black durag, the sweater, the jeans, the gloves, and everything. Was awful. Awful.
Okay, Double A.
Yeah.
Worst look.
Worst
Wolfpack,
look?
Wolfpack, Hogan, or Vince at that time?
Oh, I think Vince at that time. Because
yes.
Vince just looked ridiculous. Though my favorite Vince McMahon look, my favorite Vince McMahon screen cap was the night after WrestleMania 23. and Bobby Lashley yanked Lillian Garcia's skirt off, and there was Vince hiding under the skirt. And Vince just has this look like he's confused and looking around. That, to me, is my favorite Vince McMahon look of all time. And, of course, the lines that came out of when McMahon got his head shaved were just classic. I'm actually trying to...
Can I rewind for a second?
Wait. Let me play... hold on. Let me play this one thing, because I do have... I want to play it... come on. Where is it? Jerry Lawler. I think it's this one. No, that's not it. Okay, go ahead with what you were going to say, Surfer.
You brought up the screw job.
Yeah.
You know, I've always maintained, and I don't believe it was that was fake from the start, because you know Brett would never lose in Canada, and they had to come up with a reason for him not to win, and that's why I think there's the Montreal screw job.
Okay.
Like, so Vince can always maintain he never lost in Canada.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, Jordan, you can call in now if you want. I don't know what he's going to say about McMahon, but okay. Anyways, but where the hell is my McMahon drop? I had one here of JR and let me see if I can find it. Hold on.
Surfer, it was true that Vince didn't want his belt showing up over there.
Yeah, that is true. I believe that.
Brett wouldn't have done that.
I don't think so. That I agree with.
We said that. Sean would have been.
And, you know, so just because, you know, Lunger blazed it doesn't mean that other people would do it. I mean.
No, Shawn Michaels would have did it.
No, I heard you say Shawn Michaels did it. Say that, you know, Alundra Blaze did it. But, you know, a lot of guys leaving WWE or not, you know, they know one day they're coming back. They don't want to burn that bridge. Especially if Vince has never done anything wrong to them and did right by them the whole time. You think The Undertaker would have ever done that?
Of course not. No. He did business with Vince on a handshake deal for a long time.
So, I mean, like...
wasn't he not under contract for a long time?
I just don't think that... I think they could have... If the plan was for Brett to win and then lose the next night, they could have done that, but I think it was... The screw job was always part of the plan.
I don't know about that one. Because it was just the animosity between them cats was real.
Man. Why would you get upset over a match that you were, you know, you... The outcome is predetermined.
But if you take yourself seriously, like Bret Hart does, that's why he gets upset.
And with that, we say hello to Jordan Cobb.
Hey, by the way, yeah, sorry about the caller. Just trying to make up for having to leave the fun show early last night.
Okay,
as for the Montreal incident, I was pretty pissed off at that at first, because Bret Hart is one of my absolute all-time top three favorite wrestlers. And... learning about that whole situation, just, I was like, oh, fuck you, man. I don't even care if you did create this thing I love. Just, fuck, you're an asshole. Fuck you. But, you know, people getting upset about that is because the emotional stake they've put into it. Honestly, since Bret Hart is basically a national treasure over in Canada. But, you know, seeing something like this, you know, seeing such an injustice happen, it's understandable. They're going to get fucking angry about it. They're going to get upset. They're going to get the pitchforks or torches and want Vince's head on a goddamn pike.
Okay.
And I'll say my quick thing about the legacy of Vince McMahon. I think, honestly, I do thank him for, like a lifetime of entertainment and, you know, and memories and such. With so many great things of how wrestling is you know, has been a big part of my life. But I do think at there was at some point, like, you know, honestly, where I could tell, I think that the legacy started to get a little tainted was a while after the brand extension. It just got out of hand, like that year in 2003, where the most prominent thing on SmackDown was just the McMahon family drama.
Yeah, but you know what? That one wasn't. It wasn't horrible, though. I mean, we've seen a lot worse.
No, it wasn't bad. No, I'm not saying that. But I'm just saying. I'm saying that was just like the first domino that fell.
I don't necessarily agree with that.
Okay, that's fair. But I still say about some time after the brand extension, I think the legacy might have started to get a few little smudges on it, as it were.
Yeah, that's
my thing. Because then, you know, I thought, oh, hey, just going to bring back ECW. This might be smart. But no, I think the whole ECW trying to bring them back was a bit, you know, didn't quite work out.
Now, the only reason why the ECW didn't work was because he had the name, but he didn't have the product.
Exactly. And
that product going to cable TV the way, I mean, ECW, when it was on Spike TV, wasn't ECW prior to Spike TV.
Oh, no, it wasn't. But you know, it was more ECW than what happened with Vince, you know, when they brought that on to Sci-Fi. And, yeah, Vince, ECW champion, the whole thing with Bobby Lashley, that was a terrible storyline for me. It just was.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Again,
the whole ECW championship thing with him and Lashley, that was just terrible. Just awful, awful stuff. And, yeah, the God stuff was way over the fucking top.
I didn't mind that stuff.
Hold on. It was over the top, but I at least found, like, you know, one of my favorite promo spots came when it showed that vignette of him and Shane visiting church. I thought that was some pretty entertaining stuff right there.
The whole Vince explosion, you mentioned that. I mean, even before, you know, he came out the next night and dropped it, it was never meant that he actually died. It was supposed to make everybody believe he died. And everybody, that was the storyline.
Yeah. Even before the whole limo explosion thing was just scrap, I was like, wow, this is fucking stupid.
That limo thing just was...
But let me ask you a question. Do you think Vince, if he could just put on a show that was all entertainment and no wrestling, would he do it?
Say that again.
Like, you think he would put on a show that just had the entertainment and not the wrestling?
That would have the entertainment and not the wrestling?
Yes.
I don't think it would escape him, but it'd be difficult to have just a show of just entertainment.
You don't think he would want that, though?
No.
I mean, this is a guy who tried to get into bodybuilding and pro football.
Oh, wait, did you guys already cut Mandy XL system?
I mean, think of the landscape had the bodybuilding took off the way Vince wanted it.
It would be totally different. It totally would.
Luger would have had a super push.
Yeah.
Luger what now?
Would have had a super push.
Yeah, put. Yeah, like he would have had.
He's a bodybuilder?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No.
Remember, he came over.
Luger's body is, you know, put together for a wrestler, but for a professional bodybuilder, he did not have the physique. I mean,
Vince had his wish.
That's something different. I mean,
brought him over there for that.
If you ever met a bodybuilder in person, you know, they train a lot different than a wrestler does. But And then if he'd have got football off the ground, I don't even think he would be in wrestling today if he had got football off the ground.
By the way, I'm embarrassed to say I actually once owned an XFL football.
That was a blunder on Vince's end.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, that was a gift given to me by like one of my uncles. Like, oh, here you go. I was like, well, check.
If he had a league that was competing on the same level as the NFL, he would have got rid of the WWE.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
I don't know if I know. No, Surfer, I don't agree with that. Mm-mm, not one bit. Because Vince's bread and butter is always going to be wrestling. That's it. He knows for a fact that's where he's going to get his money, because despite...
Had the XFL gotten to the same level as the NFL...
Would have never happened.
It would have been a whole lot more money he would have been making.
Yeah, but I don't think he would have given up wrestling.
His effort into both wrestling full-time and football full-time. Which is why football failed on his...
No,
his
I don't agree with that. I think that if the XFL took off, and I don't know that much about football, okay? If the XFL took off and it was a viable entity and became an actual league like the NFL, I'm sure Vince would have put the appropriate people in place to run it on its own. Because look at the individual divisions that WWE has. Of course, there's the WWE that focuses primarily on wrestling. But there's WWE films, there's WWE music, there's WWE books, WWE home video, and the WWE network. There's no way Vince has his hand in all those pies.
But the network...
No way!
Like film, WWE films, okay? Yeah, he doesn't show up on set and give instructions. No, it's easy to pass that on to someone else to run.
But I think that would be the same way with the XFL.
He could have done that with football.
I think he could have.
I mean, you really got to have your hand on the wheels if you're going to run a football league. And, you know, the NFL moved in quickly to squash that. Because they knew...
They wanted to be a monopoly. I get it.
They knew that if anybody had the capability of putting together a second league that would have rapidly gotten to the level of the NFL or came close to competing, Vince was the guy.
Because Vince had pockets. Not too many people have the pockets that Vince did. And by that time, WWE was already a public company. Vince was a billionaire at that time. Vince had the financial wherewithal to be able to do what he did with the XFL. The difference being is that Vince decided very early on that this just wasn't worth the headache that maybe it was the first year. Because naturally, the first year is always going to be rough. You know, but look, for example.
When he can't get good stadiums and he can't get television
that
contracts.
But you know what? That would have.
The NFL
that
is locking these things down.
But, Surfer, that would have changed with time. Would have changed with time. Listen, you could say what you want about the NFL, but I don't necessarily believe it. The NFL controls the world.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Listen.
Not the everything. NFL,
the owners wish they could control the world.
Make sure they keep it. Because when the UFSL came along, right? I thought that was a joke. 3 years into it, it was a viable option that they were the NFL was losing draft picks to them and established players, and the NFL put a stop to it and started locking down cities with exclusive deals and making sure that the stadium, because they were sharing stadium, and the NFL's like, look, we're the only one who can use the stadium, and they made sure that the USFL had no place to play.
But you know what? I think that would have just changed with time. It would have just changed with time because I don't know how to explain it. It's like Vince also did the WBF. Listen, that was a waste of time. Let's be honest. It was a waste of time. But it was an interest that Vince had. And Vince, I'm talking about the Bodybuilding Federation. But it lasted for 3 years. The big difference between the Bodybuilding Federation and the XFL is that he tried to merge the Bodybuilding Federation with the Wrestling Federation, and it didn't work. It didn't. Yeah,
he
tried,
had no clue what to do as far as bodybuilding.
Of course not. But I don't necessarily believe that Vince knows how to run a football league either. I think he knows how to be a promoter, how to build a brand, and things like that. But let's say just for the sake the hell of it, let's say Vince. Hold on one second. Let's say Vince decided tomorrow morning that he didn't want to run the WWE anymore. Hold on, Isabella, you can come here. Vince didn't want to run the WWE anymore, and he ended up being the chairman or the commissioner of the NFL. I don't think Vince would do a good job.
No,
because Vince doesn't have his finger in football like he does in wrestling. But he can financially run it without any problem and put the right people in those positions to run it properly.
Well, the NFL would have never put Vince as commissioner because the stigma of Vince is he puts on a clown show. Right or wrong. I mean, if Vince came into any professional league, immediately they're going to think, this is not a real sport if Vince McMahon is involved. And that was one of the things that people thought with the XFL. I mean, you have one guy owning all the teams. So that gives the illusion, if you already know that wrestling is predetermined, well, how do you know this football game isn't predetermined? It's the same guy. So Vince is the devil and the savior at the same time.
I think it would take a lot to fix a football game versus a wrestling match.
To fix a football game, if you know what you're doing, but people thought that the FSL wasn't real, and then Vince had the idea, well, let these football players, you know, get on the mic and run their mouths like wrestlers do, and that right there gives the illusion that this is not a real sport, and Vince is trying to make something else into an entertainment business.
So just to be clear, you're saying if Vince got involved in the NFL, people would think the NFL was fixed?
I think they would take it less serious, yes. Listen, if he bought a team, okay, and just was just a regular owner, then, they would take it serious. He has the money. He could probably buy a football team tomorrow, okay? He could probably build a stadium, no problem. If he ran the NFL as commissioner, then that's going to, run a lot of red flags up.
People
wonder, what's he doing here?
People will start to think the quality of the NFL will start to diminish with Vince McMahon's role as commissioner.
But they wouldn't think it was predetermined all of a sudden, no.
Well, you have some people that would.
There would be doubters.
Some people will, because they're just still like, professional wrestling. Yeah, fuck that shit,
Let me see.
Let's say as commissioner, Vince wouldn't just be a commissioner and things would stay the same. He would try to leave his mark and change things, and you take what he did in the XFL. There's some things he did in that league that the NFL does today.
Right.
He
was an innovator.
Okay, I mean, the NFL moved in quickly to squash that. But they took some of his better ideas and integrated it into the NFL. Like the camera in the middle of the field. The NFL didn't have that before Vince did it with the XFL. And you get better angles when it comes to watching a football game now.
Yeah.
But we not doubting that.
I mean, now, I think of two guys running to the middle of the field to grab the football. Whoever gets the football gets the ball first. The NFL would have never moved to that kind of
dodgeball.
Huh?
Listen,
they do that in dodgeball,
right? There are things that are pros and cons of both leagues, but I think at the end of the day, Vince would have, done his thing, and I think he would have been okay at it, but he just would have stayed away from it. It's a lot like how NXT is now. Vince doesn't interfere, and look what's going on. I honestly believe that. I really do. But we'll never find out, I guess. 614, you're on the air.
This is Brian from the Facebook page.
What's going on, Brian?
I'm just listening on your Vince talk. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing peachy. It's WrestleMania weekend. Lots going on.
Yeah, exciting weekend here.
I know, right?
I got some points on Vince you guys have not brought up yet.
Okay.
Vince is, you know, he'd done a lot, you know, the 9/11, he was the first to go live.
Yeah.
And everything he's done with the troops has been pretty, to get him props and not put him down where there's been a lot of put-down so far.
He's done a lot of admirable things. Like, for example, the opening the WWE's pocketbook for anybody that wants to go to rehab.
Yeah.
Multiple times
over.
You know, he was the one that pushed for, all right, we got, my wrestlers have to be in shape. Can't have these pot belly wrestlers anymore. You got to be in the best shape possible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you
don't. I don't like that, though, because I like a Rusev type character that shows up with not the typical bodybuilding
but
form, and he's kind of old school.
Way better shape than, say,
Dusty Rhodes.
Tugboat, where Dusty Rhodes used to be. I mean, you see those kind of guys. I mean,
but when everybody looks the same on stage, I mean, what's the point of? I mean, you want a mix up, don't you?
Right. I agree. I agree with what he's saying, and I agree with what Surfer's saying. I honestly think that there are two types of being in shape. The WWE superstar of today are in incredible shape, and we cannot deny that.
Yeah, but, and they got blue eyes.
And they got blue eyes, all of them. But
I mean, take Miz out. He's not in the. He doesn't have the greatest of
no,
body.
No, he doesn't.
He's well over.
Right, but I and I and
he's still in shape.
But
I mean,
he's not sloppy.
No, I mean, not sloppy. Everybody's not cut.
And no, everybody's not cut.
Physically in shape.
But wait a minute, Surfer. Not everybody's not cut. But the point here that I was trying to make is that. Okay, they're amazing athletes. They're in great shape. A lot of them have impeccable physiques. And you would think that, okay, that translates to wrestling, to where that they can perform better and this and that. But then again, you go back 30 years ago to the era of the Dusty Rhodes and the Dick Murdochs and the and those types that had horrible bodies, but still. I mean, Dusty wrestled 60 minutes every single night, 7 days a week.
Yep.
And we've talked about this before.
Dusty, 80% of them was his mic skills. I mean, Dusty was bigger than life.
Right.
I mean, when you would watch Dusty, he was just like another.
He had to go like, the wrestle full 60 minutes. That's a lot on anybody.
It's a lot on anybody. And you know what? The thing with somebody like Dusty, for example. Granted, I get it. Dusty's not flying from the top rope. He's not doing moonsaults. You know, he's not jumping off the top of a ladder and going through tables and stuff like that because they didn't do those things back then. But those are just enhancements to the match today. You go in and let's say this ladder match wasn't happening tomorrow night, and it was Dolph Ziggler and Daniel Bryan in a regular one-on-one match, which is what everybody originally wanted for WrestleMania this year. Without any high spots, those two could put on easily, probably, and I say this in a rhetorical sense, they could have put on a 30-minute match without breaking a sweat. The guys of the old could do exactly the same without looking like Dolph Ziggler and Randy Orton and John Cena and things like that.
Well,
now it's all about aesthetics.
Yeah, I mean, again, Vince's weakness for preferring the bigger guy.
Jordan, it's not even about the bigger guy anymore. It's about what's aesthetically pleasing. Because in my opinion, I think Vince does enjoy the fact when he hears a Dolph Ziggler or Randy Orton or John Cena go out and they take off their shirt and, you know, you got 5,000 girls, you know, screaming off the top of their lungs and they're just, you know, to Vince, that's like, he hears the cha-ching, 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 cha-ching. That's why Vince has those people out there, in my opinion. Does that make Vince a heathen for it? You know, look, a lot of the people that are out there now that are cut, they're chiseled, they're in great shape, we're lucky that they can actually wrestle.
Yeah, it's very true, very true.
We're lucky that they can wrestle. The problem is that they're not utilized. They're the right way. That's the problem.
Some of them can wrestle.
Who?
I said some of them can wrestle.
There's a reason he opened his checkbook up for Brock, because he knows he's the biggest, fattest dude walking through the airport. He's nationally known. He knew his company could not go on relying on guys like The Rock showing up every 6 to 8 months. He needed somebody. And everyone bitches about Brock. I grew up at a time when Hogan was never on fucking TV. Ever on TV. And when he was, it was a piper's pit. It was a snake pit. It was just, you were happy to see him. And I don't know, I'm not mad that Brock is not there every week or he's not defending the belt on TV, because when he shows up and he does it, it makes it that much more special.
Right.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm sick of it. And look at Cena, because Cena, every week, he ran down our throat, coming out there with that belt. What the hell is he, a 20-time champion? And it's like, why does everyone hate him? Because he was rammed down our throats.
Exactly. But listen, I think that there's a difference between Brock and Cena are two extremes, and we want a happy medium.
That's the thing.
And I think
and it makes the Intercontinental title and the U.S. title, if we're bringing that back, it's going to make that become more special. It's going to make them become stronger.
That is true, but in a perfect world, it's still not what the fans truly want. Listen, I don't care who the world champion is, but there's something about the world champion being on television that makes the fan happy.
Regardless, but he has a mouthpiece. He has an advocate.
Regardless of what they're doing, if they're wrestling, but as long as they appear on television on a semi-regular basis, it makes them happy. There's something about Brock sitting home, you know, for most of the last, you know, he's had the title since August, so he's had the title now for 9 months. There's something about Brock sitting home for 9 months that just rubs everybody the wrong way, myself included. But
he didn't sit at home for 9 months?
No, but for the majority of the time is what I'm saying.
So what do you want, 2-3 times a month? I mean, that's good.
You know what? It's not that, because the thing is with Brock, I understand Brock is not going to wrestle, but Brock may not be the right person to be the world champion, is what I'm trying to say. Because I'm of the era of Ric Flair being the world champion or Sting being the world champion. And Flair was on TV every single week cutting a promo. Flair didn't wrestle, but Flair cut a promo every single week.
Who else do they have that is going to have a live press conference on break the news that he is firing? I mean, he's a face.
Right.
Who else?
That part I'm not debating. It's just, I'm just saying that in the grand scheme of things, you know, in the big picture, like I said, wrestler X. Let's remove Brock out of the equation now. That if somebody, some other big name WWE superstar decided to return, and Vince said, "I'm going to make you the world champion," okay, but I got to sit at home for a few months, and Vince agrees to it. It ultimately is going to rub the fans the wrong way, and it's. Yeah, okay, you're going to have to put... It forces WWE to put more emphasis on the Intercontinental title and the U.S. title and things like that, but it's like...
But Double A, these are the same fans that are tired of John Cena.
No, but that's the thing. I'm not saying... But that's where we need that happy medium. We need a little bit...
But it's the same way he worked with Hogan in the late 80s and early 90s. Just show up, do. But you know what? Hogan,
I said, I got it. You know what? On Wednesday of last week, I was at work, and I got into a little bit of a Twitter spat with somebody, and they were talking a lot about Brock, and you know how this was best for business, and this and that, and blah 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 blah. And I said, you know what? I'm happy for Brock. Brock signed a multi-year deal. He got what he wanted. You know, I assume that Vince had to have made him an offer he couldn't refuse. And the response I got was, well, don't assume anything, because maybe you don't know what the terms of the deal was. And I said, are you going to tell me that Brock signed either a deal that was equivalent to what his current deal was or less? And he says, no, I'm not saying that, because Brock probably got, he goes, Brock probably did get more in the deal. And I said, Brock probably got a lot more in his deal.
And nobody knows that. And
nobody knows that.
It's not like Brock's going to tell anybody or Vince is going to tell anybody.
No, I know that. But the point of the whole back and forth was that I was saying, well, you know, I got no problem with Brock. The problem I have is allocating all the resources and all these things for Brock, who's not there. And they said, well, Hogan did the same thing. I said, well, okay, that's partially correct. But Hogan did a lot more than Brock did. I always bring up 1997. 97 was a year that Hogan barely wrestled. But Hogan was on TV almost every week.
Oh, yeah. That was in the midst at the height of all the NWO stuff.
Yeah.
Hogan was in the nucleus of that, and he was an important part of it. Even if he wasn't wrestling, you know you wanted to see Hogan with the NWO to see what they were going to get up to.
And that's my point.
Here's my question. If everybody gets their wish and Roman Reigns wins, and he's out there every week, what's going to be the problem with him?
No. The problem with Roman Reigns is that Roman Reigns is not the guy. The problem is that what everybody wants, they don't want.
Vince sees him as the guy.
I understand that, Tony C, but I'm talking about what everybody wants now. The thing is that everybody doesn't want Roman Reigns. The thing that people want is they want either more of Brock and less of Cena. They've already got less of Cena. They've already got that. We're going on two straight WrestleManias now where John Cena is not the main focus. How much longer is this going to go? I don't know. I don't have an answer to that until this time next year. But what people want is that they don't want Roman Reigns. That's why they did what they did in Philadelphia back in January. This is why Roman Reigns got booted Access a couple of days ago. People don't want Roman. They want Brock. They just want a little bit more of Brock. Otherwise, give us a third option. The third option, the only one that I can think of, being Seth Rollins.
You know, I think if they got more Brock on a regular basis, I think they would turn on that after a while.
You know what?
Exactly.
It's not That's even that. But you know what? It's not. I'm not asking for Brock to show up on TV every week. I'm asking for Brock to show up on TV. You know, I don't want Brock to disappear for 3 months. Like, okay, WrestleMania is going to happen. Tomorrow night, Brock is going to be on Raw Monday night. Regardless if Brock is the champion or not, where does Brock go after this? Does Brock not appear until SummerSlam?
He doesn't need to.
April to mid-August, but that's the thing. April to mid-August is a long stretch.
And that's quite a few pay-per-views where you don't have a main event of your championship, too.
No, regardless if he's champion or not.
Yeah, but regardless, if he's not the champion, you can't put everybody in there with him.
No. But regardless if he's champion or not, and it's not even a matter of Brock wrestling. My point of this is, shouldn't Brock show up on television just to make some point or make a comment or do something? Let's say he takes time off after WrestleMania. Don't you think that if his next scheduled pay-per-view is SummerSlam, don't you think he should show up around May or June just to let everybody know he's still there?
We don't know what the hell he's going to do. Now that he's still wrestling, we have no clue what the contract is.
I understand that. I'm just saying, though, don't you think that in the terms of just enjoying the fact that Brock is there, wouldn't you enjoy Brock if would you rather Brock disappear for 4 months, or would you rather Brock come in after being gone for 6 weeks just to come in, say hello, and then leave until SummerSlam?
You know, I personally would be okay with Brock coming in. You can't put many people in the ring with Brock. Isn't that defeating the purpose of having him there? I mean, if he can only take on less than a handful of people, why do you have him?
Because his name draws money.
You can't draw as a name if you can't put him in the ring with anybody.
You wouldn't have got re-signed.
Draw against who?
They would draw a Hogan feud out for four months when they had, you know, four pay-per-views a year. So I mean, they're going monthly with these feuds.
Right.
And draw against who? If he's not capable of being in the ring with anybody but Cena and.
Well, why they re-signed him then, sir?
Well, but Hogan was never in the ring either of these 4 weeks. Hogan would just show up and do an interview.
That's my point, Brian. Is that Hogan at least showed up and did an interview. With Brock, we don't get that.
I'm just saying that doesn't make sense.
He shows up with Heyman, and if we get Heyman and him every week because Heyman is his mouthpiece, because Brock has not got the greatest...
I understand. No, I get that.
It would be overblown.
I get that, but I'm not asking for Brock to show up every week. I'm not asking. I'm just saying show up a little bit more. Just a little bit. If Brock is scheduled to do, let's say, and I'm not saying that this is how it is, but between now and SummerSlam, let's say Brock is penciled in for 3 appearances.
Okay.
I say, well, three between now and mid-August is like 15 weeks. Can we at least get 5? Maybe 6? Can we at least double that to give him a little bit more exposure? Because ultimately, also, I love Paul Heyman. We all love Paul Heyman on this network. But are we just going to use Paul Heyman also as Brock's mouthpiece from here to eternity? Or are we going to give also Paul Heyman something else to do like he did when he was with CM Punk and Cesaro and Axel and Ryback and things like that? Not that Axel and Ryback were anything good, but the time he was with Cesaro was magnificent. Absolutely magnificent. So that's what I'm saying. I would like to see Heyman a little bit more, but in a different capacity. And I'd like to see Brock a little bit more. I don't say Brock has to come in and wrestle. I just want to see him a little bit more. If he's actually going to be on the dotted line, okay, show up. Instead of doing 3 appearances over 15 weeks, do 5 or 6. I'm not asking for him to show up for half of those appearances. Just give
have
me
a commitment.
You know, just give me a little bit more. And that's where I think Vince tends to fall short, because I've noticed in recent years, Vince is caving very easy to a lot of things. And it's rubbing the audience the wrong way. Listen, I get it. It's business. It's going to make Vince a few extra dollars. He's going to be able to retire with a great nest egg. But who's ultimately suffering here? Because
Vince is always careful to show to go on. If we're talking Vince, that's another. Like, you know, Jarrett and Warrior both, you know, kind of held out on him during pay per views that they were not going out if they didn't get checks.
Mm-hmm.
He came through at both times.
Of course, absolutely.
That's another plus on Vince.
Right.
He always makes the show go on. Even with Owen, the show goes on. Everyone.
Right. All right. I don't know if necessarily the show should have went on with Owen. That may have been a mistake
general,
on his
you know,
part.
Warrior held out. Lord knows what the checklist for Warrior, but Jarrett got double from what Jim Ross stated when he dropped the belt to China.
I think, in my opinion, by the way, I think that's a bitch move to do. I don't care what your grievance is.
I agree, but Vince always. But it's not.
No,
like
Vince always followed through.
He always puts what the fans are expected. Fans are expected. And he did not want to what happened with the Goldberg situation. So I'm sure Vince came at Brock like, boom, boom, you're not leaving. You're, you know, the biggest son of a bitch we have, and I can't go through this at this point of this at this, you know, with the network and everything. You got to stay no matter what. And And I don't think him signing the contract included you're going to drop the belt Sunday night.
No, absolutely not. I don't
have belt tomorrow night.
Absolutely. I don't know. That doesn't necessarily mean that. Absolutely. I agree with you there. 100%. Actually, if anything, and I said this Tuesday because the news broke on Tuesday, I said it on Tuesday that the complexion for WrestleMania has changed drastically now that Brock signed
a new
deal. Because if I honestly believe that if Brock listen, I'm always under the impression that if Brock drops the title regardless, whether he was staying or leaving, that Seth Rollins was going to cash it in on Roman Reigns. And I'm sticking to that regardless of Brock's decision. But now the percentages of Brock retaining are a lot greater than what they were, let's say, 2 weeks ago. But to be honest with you, I don't know where Brock goes after tomorrow night. And it's hard for me to comprehend that we're going to continue on with just having no world champion for ultimately, let's say another year.
I think Brock all the way to Texas against The Rock. I mean, they want to break the record. I mean,
Let's talk about this in just the reality sense. Do you see yourself getting excited for Brock and The Rock at WrestleMania next year?
Yes. Done right. Done correct. Done correctly. Hell yeah.
I'm mixed. I mean, part of me I'd like to see it, but yet part of me is like, I would really like to see some fresh talent.
The match itself, I don't have a problem with. Because I don't believe Rock ever had his rematch against Brock. The problem I have is if, in fact, it's for the title, if Brock is still champion by then, all arrows point to The Rock winning the title.
And then, that's
a problem.
How long is he going to be around?
And that's a problem for me. That's a big problem.
Brock goes over The Rock. I'm thinking Brock goes over The Rock.
No, I think The Rock is going to go over Brock because Brock already has one over The Rock.
Yep. Brock has to put a ball.
And you know what? They've been saying that, you know, usually they don't bring up the past a lot. And especially going into WrestleMania, they've been emphasizing the fact that he beat The Rock in 2002 a lot lately. It's been brought up a lot. And that's what worries me. If the title is on the line. What was that, Sony?
I think that match is going to happen.
Oh, no. It's probably going to happen. But if the title is on the line, Rock winning worries me. It does. It really does. But I, you know, it's not my company. I don't have any say. Will I be in Dallas when that happens? It's possible. I was in Miami when Rock beat John Cena. I thought then it was not the right thing to do. Cena should have been put over that night. Cena was put over. He was put over a year later. There was no reason to have a second match. You know, but hey.
Now the thing about it, AA, is The Rock will be around less than Brock.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what drives me nuts, is that Vince is caving to certain people and giving them certain demands. Because listen, if we believe everything that is out there on the internet about Brock's initial contract issue was that he wanted a dual contract between the UFC and the WWE. And Vince said, absolutely not. Let's say that that's true. Okay, Brock leaves. I'm under the impression that if Brock wasn't going to get his contract the way he wanted, he was going to leave. Okay, this is not give and take. I think here's my terms, take it or leave it.
take it.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, it takes 6 months to train for a UFC match. So I don't think that was on the table.
No.
I think that's just one of them bullshit rumors somebody read off of a dumbass news site.
Okay, but here's my thing. Let's just go on with that.
I mean, Vince isn't going to let him shove twice a year. And you got to be all in on UFC. And the chance he's getting injured and Vince playing cards, pumping things promotion-wise with stocks and everything for a pay-per-view, I just kind of see that happen.
No, I get that.
See.
I understand that, but I'm talking now hypothetically.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Brock says, you don't give me what I want, I'm leaving. Brock, to me, is not the type that negotiates. I don't think Brock negotiates. I don't think he negotiates. He says, here's my terms. If you don't want to do it, the hell with you. So, to placate to Brock, Vince had to have done a lot to make Brock happy. For him to just sign a new deal Monday night, all willy-nilly, and then it's a big deal on Tuesday. I honestly think Vince probably... Listen, I don't have the contract in front of me. I don't know. There's reports out there that Brock, the terms of the deal are he's getting more money, but he's got to work more dates, which I would, you know, I would naturally assume that would be the case. I think Brock is scheduled to work almost 6 months out of the calendar year.
That's for the next few years.
That's for the
right?
next few years. I think though that Vince had to have caved to Brock for Brock to just walk in the door on Monday and say, you know what? I'm happy.
He gave him something.
He gave him something for him to sign. Yeah, that to me shows that Vince is caved.
I wouldn't be surprised
one
way or the other if Vince did indeed cave.
I think he caves a little too easily.
He's caving on something.
Let's take you back about 5 years ago. Would you ever...
Yeah, let's go.
Let's take you back about 5 years. Would you ever picture a time 5 years ago that the world champion would not be on television and not be on pay-per-view? Of course not.
No, because...
It would have never happened.
I've expected over my time watching professional wrestling that the champion be on televised programs each and every goddamn week. Because being a champion, you're essentially the face of the company. And... For fuck's sake!
No, but
you drive ticket sales.
No, but look, at also all the shit that happened over the course of the last 10 years. A wrestler sneezes, you know, has a bad case of the sniffles, and he's the world champion. They take the title off and give it to somebody else because they don't know if this guy is going to come down with pneumonia or whatever the case may be. So they're being preventative and just moving on to the next person. There's multiple scenarios of that happening over the course of the last 10 years, and then from one day to the next, The Rock is the champion and he's not on TV. And it's like, I can't believe we're in this world now where we don't necessarily have a full-time world champion. I'm accustomed now to Brock not being there. I'm accustomed already to the fact that Brock is not there, he's the world champion, and it made the world title a big deal now. I get it.
I like it.
I like it too.
Especially with the way the IC belt and the US draft set it.
Right.
Like it.
But I do feel it's still a little under what it should be. Brock should be there a little bit more. We're talking, you know, you're at dinner.
Yeah.
You got 3 slices of turkey. You don't want 3 more slices. You only want 1 more slice. That's it. That extra slice makes you happy. That's what I'm talking about. Bless you, Tony C.
Yeah, you're at dinner. You turn on ESPN, and the only guy in the whole company that could be on there is Brock.
Oh, well, yay.
Listen, if the other belt...
That's enough. Think of how many people just bought the network because of that. I mean...
Right. I agree. I'm sure a lot of people are just going based off Brock's signing.
It made me more, you know, I was already in the rest. Don't get me wrong, I'm going to watch WrestleMania every year, but it just made it that much more solid, like, all right, we don't have to put up no bullshit. Roman winning, Matt's getting booed the whole time. Now I think the place is going to go.
You still may win.
For Brock?
No.
Hell no.
But now,
Roman with the 2 months of the going for 40, IC strap or the US strap. He will not No, he's a mid-carder in 2 months.
You have the Heyman swerve, I'm telling you.
No, what are they going to do when that runs out? Then Brock's going to be alone and then put him back with Heyman immediately. I think they need to go with Heyman and Brock forward.
Brock can always try to get a revenge against Heyman.
Who's going to talk? Well, that was an option that was on the table about a year ago.
And Heyman's good when Brock can't be there all the time. They got Heyman to kind of come out and, you know, do a little bullshit once a month. And I just can't see them breaking them up.
And you know what? Brock's not normal. Brock is not normal. He's not a normal human being. He never was. And he's a freak. I hate to use that word, but he's a freak. And the thing is, when you're like that, you have to be controlled a certain way. And I think if you're on your own, it's not the same. Look, when Brock was a face in 2003, was it?
Yeah.
When he was doing his little skits and that bullshit in the back,
he beat Kurt Angle for the title, and that was about it. That was like his big highlight during that time. But then he became a face, and what was one of the first things he did? Destroyed Zach Gowan. That's a beast, and that's who Brock is.
Yeah,
Brock shouldn't be a face, and I know that. Regardless if Heyman is there or not. Brock should just remain
a face with a mean Austin Edge at most. There's no way he can just be the full no little bullshit Cena, you know, Scooby Doo
tweener
type. Like he can't. No, that is never going to be Brock.
Right. 530. You're on the air.
Hey, what up? It's Lex.
Hey, Lex, reporting from the Hall of Fame.
What's your value?
Right.
What's up, guys?
What's going on, Lex? How are things so far?
Good. Everybody's filing in, and the stage looks great.
I'm gonna cut right to the chase. Did you dress appropriately tonight?
No, I don't own anything too classy. I have a leather jacket, and that's about it.
Suit man, button-up shirt, nice little
Jordan,
slacks.
Jordan, relax.
No, there's a lot of people who have, and then there's a lot of people who went halfway. They have like jeans and a t-shirt, and then they have the blazer over it.
Right,
a blazer. But I haven't seen anybody like really classy yet.
I went to the Hall of Fame in slacks and a button-down shirt.
So we'll see, that's good. That's good. You know, you got the you look classy.
But
you know
what happens when you do that. In my situation, I'm dressed nice. You know, I'm dressed like if I'm going to a fancy dinner, and the guy next to me was wearing ripped jeans and an old T-shirt. You know, so you have to give and take, I guess, when it comes to stuff like this. But I know you had fun at. Well, listen, look what you've done already. You met Roderick Strong. You met Kevin Owens.
Yep.
Sami Zayn.
Yep.
A handful of others.
Lucky Bastard.
Yeah.
You were at Access. You went to the ROH event last night, which apparently was a blowout.
Yeah, it was good. The thing is, when you go to the Ring of Honor show, it's a different kind of crowd from the Access crowd, so it's a little bit rougher.
Now,
the guy in the crowd that was, being stupid.
Now I know that they threw a kink in the WWE threw a kink in the in your plans when they decided to have this NXT event in San Jose. And
I thought Ring of Honor was going to be at like 4:30, and I was like, oh, I can make it NXT no problem. And then actually, I was in line at Access. And I was talking to some guy, and he was like, no, the Ring of Honor show is at 8. I was like, oh, shit, I got to sell my ticket now. And luckily, I was able to find somebody to buy the ticket and get rid of that. But I wanted to go to both.
Unfortunately, you know what? That was my problem also when I was doing all the WrestleMania stuff. I just couldn't. There was no time to do everything. You know, I don't know how it is in what's going on in California, but when it was here in Miami, there were wrestling shows that were starting at 1 o'clock in the morning. And I was like, there's no way I can do everything.
Yeah.
you know.
You hear the woos around.
Yeah, I know that the red carpet here is going to start in a couple of minutes, but yeah, you missed some hell of a show though at with NXT last night, and
I mean there's so many things going on right now. There's WrestleCon a couple blocks away from my hotel. There's Kaiju Big Battle was last night, and they started at like 12:30 or something like that.
Right.
NXT. I mean, there's so many things going on. You just can't do everything, but yeah, I'm here at the Hall of Fame, and then tomorrow's WrestleMania. So I didn't overbook myself too much.
Two last things before we let you go and enjoy the atmosphere of the hall. Is there an abundance of a stupid question, I guess. Is there an abundance of wrestling fans out there? Like you can actually feel that there's wrestling in the air.
You know, I see them here and there. Like, I'm not by the convention center, which is where a lot of people are staying, so I don't see it too much. Mm-hmm. You know, I've only seen one wrestling fan in my hotel, personally, but when I got on the, because I take the light rail, the public transportation, when I got on today, I mean, it was jam-packed with people going to the Hall of Fame and access, so, you know, it's really starting to sink in, people are starting to arrive, and then tomorrow is just going to be crazy.
Yeah,
so.
Tomorrow is definitely going to be a zoo.
How much in the hole are you in so far for the weekend?
How much what?
In the hole.
In the hole.
How much in the hole am I?
Yeah.
I don't even know, probably $3,000 or $4,000.
Because he took his whole family.
Yeah.
Since you've gotten there, like, what have you...
Since I've gotten there, I've only spent... I bought a couple of T-shirts, a little pop figure. I would say around the $200 mark.
That's not bad at all.
That's fine.
Now, this is the important question. This is what everybody wants to hear. The hell with everything else that we asked. I know you were dieting.
Diet is off.
I figured that, but are you finding good eats there in San Jose? Because in all my research of you know the food cities of the world, I've never heard of San Jose being a place for good food. So I don't know.
They've got a ton of restaurants here. Tonight we haven't gone into anything local. Tonight we're going to Iguanas, and it's a burrito joint. Oh, it was on Man versus Food, and we're going to get something from there. There's also a donut shop right next to it called Spico Donut, and we're going to get some stuff from there, too. They're actually making, they have a steam donut there at that place, so I'll be getting that.
Sounds good.
Well, Lex, we're going to let you go then. We're going to let you get settled in. It's you, the wife, and the kid sitting there at the Hall of Fame, right?
Actually, just me. My wife and son are... The only thing they're going to is Access, which we went on Thursday. So I'm doing Hall of Fame and WrestleMania by myself.
Now, how do they enjoy Access at least?
They seeing Sam?
they wanted to leave before we even got in because of the long lines and everything.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Not too much, but they did better once we got into the Access and everything. But I'll be doing it by myself, which is probably for the best.
I'm sure you'll make some friends while you're there.
Oh yeah,
I mean it's only going to be you and 75,000 people. I mean,
yeah. Hey, just shout out the people next to you. You know, strike up a peculiar friendship.
Yeah, that's right. And next year, Grant EM in Dallas.
It's gonna
be a lot funner because I'll have people with me. But I could actually. It's been pretty fun so far.
I might actually attend the next WrestleMania since it is closer to me. Texas.
Well, we'll see. Those things are still in the planning stages, you know. But it looks like all arrows are pointing that the apex of Rant EM Radio is going to culminate in Dallas a year from today. So we'll have to see how that all pans out. Well, Lex, we're going to let you go because I do know that the Hall of Fame is going to get underway here in about 30 seconds, at least the red carpet stuff, and all the superstars are going to file in. You'll see Maria Menounos and all those. People, but enjoy the night. You know, we'll keep an eye out for you. I know you're gonna pop for probably for Macho Man and Tatsumi Fujinami and Kevin Nash and maybe the Bushwhackers. But yeah, enjoy the night, man.
Hey, real quick, Lex, have you seen Virgil?
I have not seen Virgil.
Damn it!
Well, that's
the only legends I've seen. I saw Vader and I saw Ricky Steamboat.
That right there is good enough for me. Vader and Steamboat are good enough for me.
Yeah, those are two of mine together.
All right, Lex, we'll let you go then.
All right, guys, enjoy the Hall of Fame, and I will call you tomorrow at WrestleMania.
All right, sounds good, man. We'll look forward to it.
Have fun.
Later.
Okay, later, man. That's Lex on the floor of the 2015 WWE Hall of Fame induction ceremony, which is currently going live on the air on the WWE Network. Now, we're going to wrap this roundtable up as well. Any final thoughts on Vince's legacy? Now, what ultimately, you go down, what are you going to say about Vince McMahon? So what, one word that you can think of about McMahon now, like I'm trying to phrase this the right way. What's one word that you're going to always think of when it comes? What's one word you'll associate to McMahon? Let's just put it that way.
Pay-per-view.
Okay. Tony C.
WrestleMania.
Jordan.
Enigmatic.
Brian.
Ruthless.
I'm going to go with... I'm going to go with genius because, despite everything, he's the only one that has been able to do this to what it is today.
There's no doubt about that. I still have so much respect for Vince McMahon, even though part of it may have diminished over the past few years. I still got a healthy, incredible respect for that man.
Yeah, we never even scratched like I brought up pay per view. I mean, Vince's
he revolutionized
his purposes like. The father of that, not the people you wouldn't have took off, but...
He built the medium, basically.
Another thing, what about him, jumping off a fucking cage? I mean, who's going to do that, an owner of a corporation?
He's a nut.
Off a cage.
He is a nut.
I mean, yeah.
He's nuts. And busting his quads on the way to the ring.
Oh, my God, yeah.
At any cost, and then a guy like me, for the first 15 years I saw him, I just thought he was just some... jabroni announcer, just a Lance Russell or whatnot, just the announcer. I didn't know, for a long time who he really was as a fan. That's another thing, he evolved just tremendously as just an owner, one of the biggest heels in the history of the business. It's just amazing his
body. How versatile he is.
Well, even as a kid, we've always knew that Vince was his father owned the company. Then everybody knew that he took over.
Through the magazines. Of the magazines, me personally, I'm not from the magazines. That's how I knew.
Like a lot of, I didn't read magazines when I was super small. I mean, magazines is more of an 80s product than anything.
Now, before we go off the air here, there's one story that's coming off. Apparently, there's an idiot at Excess that climbed the side of the Elimination Chamber to the roof. Listen, don't be an idiot, please. Thank you. That's all I have to say.
I always get somebody.
You gotta have a check-ass award for somebody.
I know, right? Okay. Coming up next, here on the WWE Network. Well, not here, but over on the WWE Network is the 2015. WWE Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Now, we don't know how long the show is going to run. We placed the... What's the over-under? Do you guys want to do a quick over-under on the runtime?
Yeah, sure. I'm going to say over 3 hours. I'm going to say about 3.5 hours.
Well, because Macho Man is not there to speak for himself, I don't think that particular acceptance is going to go long.
I don't necessarily agree with that, but go ahead.
But, yeah, I mean, there's only so much.
This is a large class. It's a large class, though.
Huge fucking class.
My brother, how long is he going to go? I can just hear it. No. I think Lanny will get about 15 minutes, 20 tops.
And I think they've learned a lesson from last year with Mr. T and his mama, so.
Well,
who's putting Medusa in? Does anybody know that?
Who knows? Probably a diva or
no
something.
No idea.
Probably could be a diva. Could also be Paul Heyman.
Very
I'm
true.
Been 3 hours. Yeah. 3 hours. 3 hours tops.
Yeah. Okay.
Four.
Tony C, you have an over under on four. The runtime? 4 hours? Tony C?
Tony. Tony says four.
Okay, 4 hours. All right.
Yeah. All right. Four
hours. So with that, I'm going to go at about 3.5 hours. But if it is 4 hours, that would put us at 12 midnight for the post show. But as soon as the 2015 Hall of Fame induction ceremony goes off the air, we will be on the air live with our post show, running down everything that went down. Now, of course, if you're listening to us live and you're on the go and you're not going to watch the Hall of Fame induction ceremony, immediately following this broadcast, we'll be replaying last night's Freaks and Effing Geeks. And then if you missed any part of this show, it's going to replay after the Hall of Fame post show. The Hall of Fame post show is just part of the entire weekend of coverage that we've got for you, and it continues tomorrow, beginning at 8 a.m. with a replay of the Lex podcast from Thursday night. Then the Rexplex at 10 a.m. The Wrestling Call-In Show live at 12 noon. Turnbuckle Throwbacks live at 2 p.m. The Rant will be live at 4. Then at 11 p.m. we will have a 2-hour WrestleMania 31 post show recapping everything that went down at the Showcase of the Immortals. So with that said, for everybody in the chat room, everybody listening live, for our callers and everybody who participated on this panel, Brian, Jordan Cobb, Phil, Tony C, Surfer, and Lex for calling in from the Hall of Fame, I'm Double A. We will see you in about 4 to 5 hours time for the Hall of Fame post show here on Rant EM Radio. Enjoy the Hall of Fame, everybody. No chance.